we kind of came to the conclusion, we came to the conclusion that the contribution was to help Christians in need, and it prevented Christians from lacking what they needed. So we're going to move on here. We've got a couple questions left in chapter 8. We'll hopefully get through chapter 10 today. So, somebody read Galatians chapter 6, 1 through 5 for me. Galatians 6, 1 through 5. Anybody? Yes, sir.
Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person's temper. But watch yourself, for that you may also be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own action. Then they should take pride in themselves alone, without comparing himself to someone else. For each one should carry their own load.
Okay. So what was Paul's concern here? What we just read. What was his concern here?
Help each other to let the struggle not fall into the trap of what they do.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, he was worried about their spiritual and emotional needs for the brethren. Okay, any other comments? Okay. Somebody read 2 Thessalonians. Jump over to 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. Chapter 3, 7 through 15. Second Thessalonians, I was in first. Second Thessalonians chapter 3, 7 through 15.
For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example. We were not idle when we were with you, nor did we eat anyone's food without paying for it. On the contrary, we worked night and day, laboring and toiling so that we would not be a burden to any of you. We did this not because we do not have the right to such help, but in order to make ourselves a model for you to follow. For even when we were with you, we gave you this rule: if a man will not work, he shall not eat. We hear that some among you are idle. They are not busy, they are busy bodies. Such people we command and urge in the Lord Jesus Christ to settle down and earn the bread they eat. And as for you, brothers, never tire of doing what is right.
What's Paul's point here? What is Paul trying to make the point here of? You guys don't all have to give me the answer. Okay.
We don't deserve anything. So you need to be working for, you know, if the brethren are helping, you need to be, you know, working somehow.
Okay. Dave. Okay.
If you're
Okay. Okay. You think that maybe people tried to, I'm just throwing this out, maybe try to take advantage of the system, maybe?
And try to?
Yeah.
You can't find a book, chapter, and verse that says God helps those who help themselves.
Yeah.
But I think the principle is at least alluded to here.
Yeah.
The expression,
yeah.
Do what you can for yourself.
That's right. That's right.
And hopefully be able to do something to help others too.
Right, right.
And we all know that there are certain circumstances in life where, you know, that's not possible.
Yeah, things happen. Yep. Yep. Yep, exactly. We see it today. I mean, I wouldn't just say so much in the church, but just in America generally, people take advantage of the system. But it's like what she said, kind of becomes, some people it's human nature, I guess. I don't know. But I wrote down, giving an example. His point was giving an example of the Christian work ethic, working hard to be self-supportive. So I wrote that down as a little note there. Anything else? We're going to wrap up chapter 8. We got to keep moving here. Chapter 9. Any other comments? Chapter 9. I gave you guys a handout for 9 and 10. That is your action points for the week. More verses to memorize Virgil. There, actually, some of these are repeats, so shouldn't be too hard for you. So there's 3 on this week and 6 next week. So there's 9 verses to memorize. What's that?
No, nothing.
Oh, okay.
I'll read them.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I read them too. Okay. Chapter 9, lower than a pregnant ant. Okay. Let's go back a couple chapters real quick. Remember when Mike tried to pin Randall down? We were talking about that. Pin him down, and he said, what did he want to find out?
He wanted a simple yes or no.
He wanted a simple yes or no about what?
Was he going to hell or not?
Were you guys the only church going to heaven, or are we all going to hell? That's what he wanted to find out. So later in the week, he went back to work and he met Randall. He came through the back door starting in chapter 9. He comes through the back door at OSI where he worked. And Randall came up to him. You remember this? And as he came up to him, Mike said, look, I don't want to argue. I don't want to argue about anything. But what did Randall say? Do you guys remember? Yes. He just said, here's what he said. I wrote it down. Randall replied. He says, Mr. Mike, it's my Christian duty to come to you and apologize for offending you. Now, wait a second. Now, Mike was the one who was pinning him down, right? Okay. But Mike said what? He was floored when Randall came to him. He was floored that he came to him. He says, I'm the one yelling at Randall, and I was pressing him to just verbalize what he believed, what his convictions were. That's all he was doing. He was just trying to get him to say that. And he's coming to me and apologizing to me. So Randall said, I'm truly sorry if I offended you in any way. Will you please forgive me? With a question. Mike said he was ashamed of, and he felt lower than a pregnant ant. That's where we get the title from chapter 9. He felt lower than a pregnant ant. Has anybody felt low as a pregnant ant? I heard this quote one time. Somebody said that person was low as pond scum. That's pretty low. That's lower than a pregnant ant. Somebody read Matthew 5. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 5, 23 and 24. I think this is one of our memory verses for, well, no, it's not. It was that earlier.
In the
It's in the book for sure. Matthew chapter 5, 23 and 24. Does somebody want to read that? Or will somebody read that for me?
If therefore you are presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering.
First be reconciled to your brother, and then present your offering. Do you think this is something we all need to remember within the church? Do we ever have problems with each other sometimes? I've never seen it. Never seen it happen in the church. If we took this to heart and seriously lived by this, things would be a lot easier in the church, don't you think?
Are you sure you've never seen it in the church?
I've never seen it in the church. Yeah, I have. I've seen it. Okay, any comments on that? How did Randall's actions affect Mike's desire to study the Bible? How did Randall's actions affect Mike's way of studying the Bible? Or his desire to study the Bible, sorry. How did Randall's actions... Okay.
And Randall understood the context of the passages he was quoting or reading, right? And Mike talks about, you know, there's passages that he had learned, but just learning this passage, not what is, you know, what's going on around that passage? Why is that passage relevant? Why is that passage in the Bible?
Okay. Any other comments? I wrote down, there was a number of things I think that Randall affected Mike in his his desire to study. First off, the example that he was. We talked about this a few weeks ago, how he was a loving type of person, happy type of person. The list goes on. And go back to the way he apologized to him. It floored Mike, he said. And, you know, he tried to make it right with Mike. He didn't want to offend him. But what did Mike call him? What did Mike call him after this had all happened? He said that he, on page 67, he says he was a true Christian. He saw something different in Randall. He saw something different in him than what most people or the world would even be like. And sometimes the sad thing is, we can be this way. My pride stands in the way. I'm not going to say anything. I'm right. And it's a prideful thing. And Randall didn't have that. So, any other comments? On to number three. Remember what Mike was doing? He was trying to find out why the name the Baptist Church existed and who started the Baptist Church at that point. And he was actually asking different preachers, and he went to his own preacher later back in, what was it, seven or eight, I have to look back, to get the answer. We would never get an answer. So what primary point did Randall make about the impossibility that John the Baptizer started the Baptist Church? Dave, it looks like you're wanting to say something.
He points out that by the time Jesus makes the comment about starting a church, by that time John's already dead.
Okay. Okay.
John never said, "Follow me."
Never did. Okay, somebody, let's look at Matthew 16 real quick, 13 through 18. Matthew 16, 13 through 18. I can read it. Matthew 16, 13 through 18. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he began asking his disciples, saying, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And he said, "Some say John the Baptist, and others say Elijah, but still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered and said to him, "Blessed are you, Simon, or Jonah, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overpower it." Look at your handout real quick. Up at the top, I wrote in there Greek meaning. Everybody see that? Top right? Peter. The Greek word for Peter is Petros. Petros is a piece of rolling rock or fragment. Dave mentioned earlier that, or a pebble, and the rock is Petra. A lot of you probably already know this. If you don't, we've got it here. Rock is Petra, a solid, massive, immovable substructure, or like a bedrock, something that's strong. So let's look at verse 18 again. "I also say to you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church." What's he doing here? What's Jesus doing here? Our Catholic friends will say this is one of their first mistakes. They say that the church was built on Peter. This is where they get the verse that the church was built on Peter, and that Peter was, I believe they say it was the first pope. Is that correct? I think he's considered the first pope. So that's where they get this from. But what's Jesus doing here? Anybody? Somebody? Who said that? Say that again. Okay, he's using symbolism. Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. In English, we don't generally have that separation of gender like they do in like Spanish, and stuff, for example, you know, with an O or an A or whatever, if it's male or if it's female gender. And Petros or bedrock is, or not Petros, Petra is like a neuter or feminine gender. It's a different gender. So when Jesus said on this rock, if he was talking about building the church on Peter, he would have said on you.
Okay.
So,
could they put in there on this rock, they could put on this fact?
On this what?
On this fact that Jesus was the Son of God, that he was the member of the church, just put it on this rock?
Could have. Bedrock, or something strong. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, that's the rock that Jesus is talking about. He's going to build his church.
Okay. What is this? I just kind of threw this together here. Verse 18, "And also I say to you that you are Peter, Petros, piece of pebble, rolling rock. And upon this rock, Petra, solid, massive, immovable foundation, or substructure, or what am I trying to say? Substructure. or bedrock, I will build my church. So you can see the two differences there. That's good for our Catholic friends. That's their number one right there. We were having a discussion with some Catholic friends one time, and that's what they brought this up, that the church was built on Peter. That's how they got started.
Well, the way the situation flows, you can see why a person that didn't know the meaning of those two words...
You can see why they could misinterpret it. Okay? I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Go ahead.
Is the noun singular or plural there?
I would say it's plural, right? Okay. Say that again.
Is the you, when you say, are the you the king, keys to the kingdom of heaven? Is that singular or is it plural? You.
Is it? Troy's thinking.
That's a good question.
Right.
Very special in the establishment of the coming church.
Yeah. What's that, Dave?
And he was very special in that he was kind of took the lead on Pentecost. Preaching
yep.
that sermon. And so he was special, but it wasn't that he was as special as some people make him.
Okay. Just curious, I'm just thinking about this. Why do you think Jesus used Peter for this situation? Why couldn't he have used
someone with a name besides Brock so we wouldn't be having
this? Yeah. Exactly. Like Matthew or you know.
Think about it. Prior to this, what did they always call Peter? Simon.
Okay. It's kind of, I guess that would be kind of another study. Is the use singular or plural? I guess we could study that another time. But okay. What's that?
Was Peter married or not?
I don't know. Was Peter married at that time?
Because Jesus secured his mother-in-law.
Yep. He could have been the... Oh, I was going to say, I thought they couldn't be married. But that's about to change, I think, isn't it?
Yes.
Changing it. So, okay. Any other comments? All right. We'll move on. So I just wrote that on there just for notes for you. All right. Okay, Matthew 14:10, I'll read that real quick. Two chapters prior to that, and David mentioned this, that John the Baptist was beheaded by Herod. Verse 10 says, and he sent and had John beheaded in the prison. So John was beheaded before Jesus even said that he was going to build his church. So that's out of the question if you're studying with your Baptist friends. So that pretty much ends that right there. So these three verses were the three verses that Randall showed Mike on the establishment of the church. You need to write these on your card, because these are three of them we need to memorize. And I think actually all of these are already down, but it's Matthew 16, 13 through 18. That's what we just read about how Jesus said, upon this rock I will build my church. Matthew 16, 13 through 18. And then Acts 20, 28. He purchased the church with his own blood. That's a memory verse. And Colossians 1, 18. That Christ is the head of the body, the church. Colossians 1, 18. That's what he used to teach him about the establishment of Christ's church. Just those three. I'm sure there's a lot more there than that. But that's the three that they mentioned. Okay. Any other comments? That's chapter 9. I think we'll make it through chapter 10 today. We'll get 2.5 chapters done. Trust me, if we don't get through this, I'm going to be here till Christmas, and you're going to be sick of me. You'll be tired of seeing me stand up here. Chapter 10. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. 1997. I was converted in 1995. So 2 years after I was converted, my grandparents were going to be baptized in the Baptist church. So I was pretty brave at the time and decided I'm going to go see the Baptist preacher over at the Baptist church. His name was Reverend Wheeler. And I knew Tom Wheeler. I probably shouldn't say names. Since I was in middle school. So I decided I'm going to go see him, and I'm going to ask him, and I already knew what the answer was going to be, but I wanted to see his response to, why are my grandparents being baptized? What are you baptizing them for? What are they being baptized for? And the answer was what I expected. Baptism for a show of faith. Baptism, how do you say that? They're being baptized into the Baptist church. When in fact, that when we read scripture. So me, young, thinking I had it all, you know, I was going to change his mind. I'm going to show him different. Well, it didn't work real well that way. But after a long discussion, as a matter of fact, for about 3 hours one afternoon, it went from baptism to miracles to the apostles, and I was trying to show them the difference between what the apostles, the miracles they were able to perform, to what we have today, and the differences of the gift of the Holy Spirit. And that went on for 3 hours. And when we got to the end, what he said to me was, Ron, it seems like you're kind of in one of those cultish things. And that's his exact words to me. And it's funny, because when we read chapter 10, when Mike went to see the Lutheran preacher, remember this? He said the same thing to Mike. He said, it seems like you're in a cultish type of thing. It's something a cult would do. Or a cult would say, you're exclusive only to heaven. And so Mike was pretty geared up at that point after being told that, and he was ready to go back and see Randall. So, question one, what are some of the many reasons that people look at us, the Church of Christ, Christ Church, as a cult? Why do they look at it? Maybe you guys never ran into this before. You know, my situation, I ran into that with a Baptist preacher. He thinks, you know, that we're kind of a cult because we're the only ones going to heaven. And that's the kind of way he took it too. I mean, how do you get around when you try to tell somebody, look, the only way is to put on Christ in baptism, when you're starting to, how should I say, narrow it for them, and they think we're narrow-minded, and that, oh, you guys got it all figured out, and you're the only ones thinking you're going to heaven. There's no way of getting around that. But what are some other ways that people see us as kind of that cultish? No, I didn't. What is the definition? Does anybody know?
I'll ask
Siri. Huh?
I'll ask Siri.
All right, Kelly. Ask Siri. What is a cult?
Something that
I just hope the Church of Christ doesn't pop up on that.
Who puts that out?
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons people look at that is because of the insistence of the church on having a scriptural answer, a biblical answer for everything, instead of just feelings or situational ethics. You know, I think that's part of it.
Okay. So what does it say, Kelly?
It doesn't really reveal anything. A system of religious veneration and devotion directed toward a particular figure or object. To me, that particular definition from Oxford Dictionaries, that sounds like every religious group.
Sure. I always picture cult as a David Koresh type of thing. You remember David Koresh down in Waco, Texas? One man, and he's kind of, didn't he call himself Jesus? Or he had connections direct with Jesus or something there. I don't remember the whole thing, but people will follow a man. Jimmy Jones, it's 1978. That's what I think of a cult. But anyway. So he looked at us kind of as a cult, but we brought some things out. I think you bring things out to these guys who went to a seminary school, and how dare you show us something different? This is my show us something different that we've been taught, because we've got it all kind of figured out. Maybe, I don't know. So.
Hey, Ron.
Yes. Oh, there you go. Okay.
Do the higher up members toss out shame, guilt, and insults? Do they use condescending language? Do they put the brunt of the blame on the backs of the members? Do they pressure you into isolation? False promises, man-made promises that will happen to you if you stay? Reading material that has been had stuff cut out, stuff blacked out, that sort of thing.
Okay.
No media, secrets.
Okay.
That sort of thing. I would say we don't qualify.
No. And I did not make you come to this class today. You guys all volunteered, correct? Okay. All right. We'll keep moving here. John 15:5. Let's read that real quick. We've got about 5 minutes left. John 15:5. I am the vine, and you are the branches. He who abides in me, and I in him, he bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. What did a Lutheran preacher say about John 15:5? He said, Jesus is the vine, and the various denominations are the branches. I've heard that before, actually, in the Baptist church. That's nothing new to me. But have you guys ever heard that before?
Never,
never heard that. Yeah. So, what are the effects of one misquoted scripture like that? What can that do? Look what it did to Mike.
Yeah, his mouth dropped open.
Yeah. He said, I never heard that before. And what was Mike doing? What was his plan after that? Do you remember? He says, I'm going back, and I'm finding Randall. He thought he had it. He thought he had trapped Randall, and he was loaded again for bear, and he was heading back. And it goes back. Let's go back to 2 Timothy 3 and 16 and 17. We need to be prepared. We need to be studied up. And that's where the biggest problem is. Do I know everything? No, I don't. I'm not saying that I know everything. But that's my mistake. I think that we have to continually read and study and be ready with an answer and to know what's being said. And the world is not being, they're not learning, they're not being taught. Whose fault is it? It's kind of our fault in a lot of ways. We're not teaching. We're not going out and trying to convert people. It all falls back on the Christian. Am I right? Or am I wrong? Am I crazy? Tell me if I'm crazy. I already know I'm crazy. What's that?
You're crazy, but you're right.
I am crazy. Ask Stacy. She'll tell you. Okay, we'll keep moving here. Randall now has become, kind of like what Dave said, Mike's spiritual fountain, okay, for getting and understanding Scripture. The question is name three Christian traits found in the Bible that Randall demonstrated that helped establish him as Mike's go-to guy. For spiritual answers. What are the name some traits that Randall had that made Mike his go-to guy?
Well, Randall always went to the Bible first.
Okay, his knowledge. He had some knowledge there, but he did go to the Bible a lot. Okay.
Humility.
Especially after the apology thing.
Gentle
was a big one. And his love, and his, you could tell he just loved people, he loved God, and just the way he acted. That's what we need to take from this. And I think this is an important question. It kind of seems like a simple, silly question, but if you stop and you think about Randall's life, what are we like on the outside? What are we like away from these four walls in here? Are we gentle at work? Are we a loving person? Are we, happy? All that Randall had. There was something different about Randall that Mike saw that we need to live by. Great example. Who said, yes?
He didn't take things personal. Randall didn't take things personal. He let the Bible speak for itself. And he was not embarrassed or take things in a negative light any time.
Okay.
Patience.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Who has patience in here? Lee raised his hand. I don't believe it, but okay.
I have them. They're
Yeah, we all have patience in some ways. If you have kids, you learn how to have patience in some ways. So, okay. Why did Mike remind himself, last question, we got to quit. Why did Mike remind himself, don't drink the Kool-Aid?
That's what I was going to ask. Is there something buried in that statement?
Why did he say, what does it mean to not drink the Kool-Aid? Okay.
Listening to other people to tell you.
Okay.
In the context of this book we're reading, he wasn't ready to go all the way to where Randall was, but he's still, because I think that's part of it, is that he's, you know, still wanting to study. And he's not ready just to say, okay, we're going to be right.
Right. Yeah, the term "don't drink the Kool-Aid" came from the Jimmy Jones back in 1978. Most of you guys were, I remembered as a kid, but 1978. You remember what happened? 900 people had died. It was a cult. 900 people had died because somehow he convinced them to drink soda. I don't even think Steph and Tyler were born in 78. Were you? 86. I was in high school. I'm getting old. Convinced them to drink this like soft drink mixed with cyanide. I think if I remember right, they were coming in to break up the group, and Jimmy Jones convinced them, hey, you know, drink this, you'll die, you'll go to heaven, you don't have to worry about it. So that's where the term "don't drink the Kool-Aid" came from. So Mike didn't want to drink the Kool-Aid in case he kind of thought that there was a possibility that the Lord's church was a cult, because he was told that. That's where he got that from. All right, that's it. We got through chapter 10. Any other comments?
Well, Kool-Aid is artificial.
Yes.
Does that come in?
No. It could. Could. Yep. But yes, Simon Peter, Simon's name was changed to Peter because Simon meant lazy, or what did Simon's name mean? It was not with good work.
It was not complimentary. Sure.
Yeah, I know that. I couldn't remember.
I can't exactly. Remember exactly either.
That was good. Thanks for your comments.
Yeah.
Appreciate that, man. Always help a bunch.
So that's the thing. I can't remember, but I believe, I can't remember from when I was studying, but I believe that the U in that verse 19 is quoted. But I'm not positive.
That's why I didn't say anything.
Well, I think,
in other words, you know, Jesus is there with a group of people, not just Peter.
Right.